Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the third episode of Deep Space Jukebox. I am your host for this week, Andrew Hale. I'm coming to you live from Vermont.
I'm Rob, and I'm coming to you live from Richardson, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas.
And I'm Jonathan, coming to you from Garland, Texas, which is another, well, it's its own city, but it's kind of a suburb of Dallas, too.
My name is Aaron. And I'm coming from you from my own state of mind.
I see what you did there. Oh, gosh.
This week, we're going to be talking about a song called Samson from the artist Regina Spektor. I first heard this song It would have been right after I graduated high school, and I was starting to listen to cool people music. And one of the girls that I had a crush on when I was in fifth grade, she put this song on her MySpace profile, and she was a cool kid at that time. Mm. So I decided that I needed to learn to like this kind of music, and it didn't take long. It's a really great song. Regina Spektor has a beautiful voice and is very skilled on the piano, and so it just comes together for a really great song. It's not a particularly complex song musically, but it's really beautiful.
Just on the note of complexity, I think it's one of those songs that really shines in its simplicity. There's something about a musical artist that is so talented that they can sing something without any bells or whistles. It's just their voice and a piano, and yet it's excellent music still. They don't need kind of the, you know, not that it wouldn't, you know, be still good with all kinds of extra effects or whatever else, but it takes a true artist, I think, to shine at that low complexity level.
If you watch any of the recordings that she's done of this live, every one of them is just brilliant. So when you strip away all of the other stuff and you also have the performance chops to actually do the thing, it's just really something special. For those of you maybe who aren't familiar with the story of Samson, it's from the Bible, from the Hebrew scriptures in the Old Testament. And it's really funny because there's nothing happy about this story, and the Bible doesn't pretend like there's anything happy about this story. It's in an awful time in Israel's history, and the Bible goes out of its way to make sure that you know that everything about this is awful. So Samson, this is a time when Israel doesn't have a king. They have judges who are like temporary spiritual authorities in Israel and sort of governmental a little bit. And God chooses them supernaturally. So God chose Samson to be the judge for Israel, but he's not a very good judge. Like he doesn't take responsibility for leading the nation spiritually. He's violent. He's deceptive. He has a short temper. He's promiscuous. He has like open disregard for authority and moral standards. He's kind of like a Thor-Loki mashup. He's super strong. Like his body count is over 4,000 dead people that he killed with his hands. But he's also like a liar and a trickster. So like he's not a good guy, and the Bible doesn't pretend like he's a good guy or even an anti-hero. Like it just kind of lays it out there and lets you judge for yourself. And then Delilah, who's the ostensibly who's singing the song, whose voice the song is in, is the Bible portrays her as like an emotionally manipulative person who betrays Samson for money. And it's not like in a moment of weakness. She has to try to betray Samson multiple times before she's actually successful at it.
Over what was probably weeks, yeah.
Yeah. And Samson's such a meathead that he doesn't catch on, or he doesn't care. So that's the biblical context. It's a really sad story. Samson's a violent man. Delilah's a manipulative, unfaithful woman, and it ends in death. In the Bible story, Samson tears down the columns of this meeting hall and kills everybody inside of it, including himself, after being betrayed by Delilah. So that's sort of the biblical context. Whether or not Regina Spektor is actually doing a retelling of this, I think is up for grabs. But that gives you kind of the context that we're familiar with coming from a Christian background, and Regina Spektor is familiar with coming from a Jewish background.
I got a sense listening to this song that there's something much deeper going on here than my brain has enough cleverness to decipher. Like there's things that seem to not make sense at all. And like straight contradictory statements, like the Bible didn't mention us and things like that. And it's like, all right, she's clearly alluding to something here. And I felt like I never quite fully got what that was. Maybe I'm just bad at this.
It is really obtuse. I think she's maybe doing one of two things. So maybe it's like a revisionist narrative of the Bible story. So taking a Bible story and telling it from a different perspective, you know, a semi-fictional perspective or something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
It could be that. Or it could be that she's taking characters that we all are familiar with and plopping them right down into a song so that as soon as you start listening, even before, as soon as you see the title of the song, you already have a context for what's happening. Now, she happens to like subvert that context immediately.
But, with the first line.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like she was his downfall, not the other way around. So But that's a good point, though.
I think I lean a little bit more on the maybe like a third reading.
Okay.
The sense that I get from it is that she's talking about an imaginary couple. The woman in the story has built her life off of supporting the man on the promise that they would one day be secure or safe or meet a goal that he has, maybe like running for president or being a celebrity or something that would win them fame and being remembered. And I think that's the heart of this, is like the whole song feels to me like the fear of dying and no one ever remembering you. And not just that, but doing it with someone else that also is as broken about the idea as you are. I hear the words as her, like it's the seasons of their relationship. So the song starts with the ending, you are my sweetest downfall. And then I loved you first. And then it starts in their relationship. I can even see if I can pull up the lyrics. It has this this kind of traversal through like beneath the sheets of paper lies my truth. I have to go. Your hair was long when we first met. And then I loved you first. Beneath the stars came falling on our heads. So it's like these kind of snapshots of like moments of their life. Mm-hmm. And then at the very end, it's Samson went back to bed, not much hair left on his head. He ate a slice of Wonder Bread and went right back to bed. And I see that as like, he's an old man and he doesn't have any more hair. It's all fallen out. And Wonder Bread is like the most kind of like bland type of food that you can eat and then just go straight back to bed. Like they don't have a lot. They don't have anything that's sparkly or anything that they wanted to with the promises that they had at the beginning of the song.
So you would read the refrain, the history books forgot about us and the Bible didn't mention us, as regretful.
Yeah. This sense of the song for me was like a life that never got there. I think I'm particularly sensitive to it because there's like being recognized and seen is a big part of my psychology. Looking back and realizing like what I'm seeing when I look at my life with you is what we wanted it to be never happened.
What would you make of the foil to that, which would be the biblical narrative, where the way that you get into the Bible, the way that you get into the history books is extreme violence and betrayal?
I don't look at the mentions of the Bible or the biblical context of the story as anything other than like a story that was doomed from the start.
Gotcha. Okay.
That I think that's the crossover that I've always read it as.
Interesting.
And it also makes it more eerie because anyone that knows the story of Samson is like, it ends with him realizing that his life is basically the best thing that he's ever going to have accomplished in his life is doing an act that's also killing himself in the process. Mm-hmm. And that's a, that's such a crushing thought, like no pun intended. Yeah. Like
he's got jokes.
it's a horrible thought of like the last thing I'm going to do is also the best thing. And that's not to say, that's not saying like there were other best things. Like this is the best thing because it's the only good thing I've ever done. And I look at like the story that she's laying is like realizing, looking over her life was like, there wasn't even a best thing that I did. Like it was a life of following in the footsteps of someone that never became what they could have been.
And that's tragic. I think it's actually a little column A, a little column B.
Oh, the columns.
The column.
Oh, I get it. Columns. Yeah.
I think I would lean towards Aaron, but I think it feels like a song about sabotage, like mm-hmm. like but self sabotage, like where she's looking at someone who she knows what he's capable of. She knows the great things that he can accomplish and what he's been called to do. And she sabotages those. She sabotages that, you know, like she cuts his hair every night in a way, you know, where it's like mm-hmm. kind of the way where you're in a difficult, like I don't want to say an abusive relationship, but like an unhealthy relationship where you may see the potential in the other person, but you're sabotaging them for your own ends. Mm-hmm. And she's, I think, looking back on that with regret. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would take it out of the biblical. Like, I don't think she's literally talking about the actual Samson and Delilah.
Right.
But I think she's definitely echoing that for sure.
So you know, I think you're right. I think, and Aaron, I think you're also right about this being a story of tragedy, about being forgotten. But I wonder, though, if this very clear reference to the Bible story is actually being turned on its head and used. I think maybe she's using it because she knows a lot of people are going to be familiar with it. But she intentionally like misrepresents the classical story with every single element except for the cutting of his hair. That's the only accurate piece. Everything else, like, we couldn't bring the columns down. Well, he did mm-hmm. do that. And like, you are my downfall, when it's actually the other way around, and on it goes, like everything she gets wrong. But then she complains that the history books forgot. And I wonder if that's her way of, all those intentional like pieces of misinformation is her way of saying, hey, the story y'all know is not what actually happened to us. I was there. I know what happened. And that's not how it went. And the history, you know, here's everything that actually happened. And the history books forgot. They told a different story. But what our tragedy actually is, this is what really happened. I maybe that's reading really too far into it, but that's kind of how, in the light of what Aaron said and what Rob added, I wonder if she's using that familiarity of the story as a device to, you know, turn it on its head. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and I think it can be both. Like the Rob, I never noticed that before, but I think you're totally right. Like, which makes it even more like heart-wrenching, because that suddenly makes it a lot more relatable for people. Because mm-hmm. there's so many relationships where one of the people is a lot healthier than the other. And that's not a dig against the person who's struggling with stuff, but like, to live a whole life that way is mm-hmm. a horrible kind of weight.
Especially when she actually references cutting his hair, she says, "I cut his hair myself that night." Where it's like, it's almost like the act of like cutting Samson's hair, like that's almost a trope, not a trope, but like a trope unto itself. Where it's like mm-hmm. you're basically like knocking the legs out from under someone. Like when you're, if, you know what I mean? The idea of like I'm cutting Samson's hair. It's like if I said that to any of you guys, it's like, I'm taking your strength away. Like I'm deliberately bringing you down. And the fact that she's saying that, you know, happens to us daily, but then she was the one that did it. Even, and then it's like, comes right after him telling her, you know, her hair, you know, that she's beautiful, her hair is red, you know, and then, And then she regretfully, I feel like, is like, and in the middle of that, I did this to you.
It's open and honest in a certain way. She's not trying to justify herself. It's evident that she's very fond of the guy. So she's not trying to pretend like, you know, justify herself and pretend like she's the victim or she's not the one to blame or anything like that.
I've listened to it twice today at different parts of the day. It comes on my shuffle usually about once a week and I'll listen to it all the way through. I realize that I'm picturing a scene usually when I'm listening to the song. The image that I get with this one is like, they're both talking to each other from their deathbeds. Like they're both about to die. And they're both old and they're both thinking back over the life that they shared. And it's half confession, half, like remembering the love that they shared.
I wonder if that's just a description of deathbed in general, is the things you say there are half confession and half looking back in fondness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an interesting thought. I have a question. I'm a little lost on a couple of the lines. I'm just trying to figure out what they mean. In the second, I guess it's the second verse, where it says, beneath the stars came falling on our heads, but they're just old light. They're just old light. What does she mean by that? That's the one piece that I really feel like I can't decipher.
I think this is just a memory. I think there's two things. One is the thing that actually fell on their heads in the Bible story was a meeting house.
Yeah.
A building fell on their heads in the story.
You think that's what she's alluding to?
It might be because it's a contrast, you know, in the last verse, you know, couldn't bring the columns down, couldn't destroy a single one. Like the building fell on their heads in the Bible story.
True.
They're inside a building. The thing falls on their head. In this verse, they're not inside a building. They're outside. The only thing falling on their heads is the light from the stars.
I see.
I agree. And I think the old light bit is, to Andrew's point, she's reliving a memory. So those lights are now old. They're just old light.
Or it could be a reference to
the light from stars are millions of light years away. So that could, but that seems like way too scientifically like precise to be what it means.
I don't know. I mean, the song's full of anachronisms. It's using ancient characters to tell a story in a modern context with Wonder Bread and scissors and understanding that the light from stars is old.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. Every time I think about the actual Samson story, I picture Delilah with scissors. Like maybe because like I first heard it in like children's like church where they had like giant yellow scissors in the little picture. <books that she,
laughs> Nice. Can I ask a question? What did she use if not scissors?
Like a knife.
Had to be a knife.
Yeah. Do they have scissors? I don't really know.
No
scissors. Are you sure?
Like, doubt it.
Are you sure? Come on.
I mean, maybe she held two knives together and like slid the blades together to make like.
I mean, definitely like electric clippers for sure not.
Yeah.
But I mean.
Well, okay. So 400 BC.
Oh, somebody's looking it up online.
Oh.
But this is before 400 BC.
This is
before.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like 1400 or.
What do y'all think about the I loved you first refrain?
I think that's just everything about the Bible story, to Jonathan's point, is subverted. And so in the Bible story, Samson sees Delilah and claims her, starts sleeping with her, even though they don't get married. So that's the way the Bible story goes. This is just an inversion, just like everything else in the story, if you're looking at it from that perspective.
Well, and furthermore, in the story, we have no reason to believe she loved him at all.
Yeah.
She was just using him to make a buck.
Mercenary.
And like, there's no indication that she had any feelings for him whatsoever. She was just seducing him to as a means to an end.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing about too is we might be assuming... You know, it's easy to assume that this is all coming from the perspective of Delilah just because, you know, Regina's singing the whole thing. But it's like, what if that's Samson at the end saying, you know, they could both say the same thing of each other.
I feel like that's kind of something that like couples, especially ones starting out, will say a lot. Like, or I love you more. I love you first. Like, as kind of like
adolescent in a way.
Yeah. And that's not something that I hear a lot of like older couples say, not that they don't like kind of hold that sentiment somewhere in them.
Older couples say, "You are my sweetest downfall."
Exactly.
Rob, do you want to talk about anything?
No, I'm totally kidding. Obviously, I'm joking.
I know. I know.
That I like. That's a good way to say it, Andrew. Of like, it's a little adolescent. And maybe here's another piece to it too. For me, is like, there's part of my psychology is a very like acute awareness or concern about what I'm going to be like as an old man, which is kind of a funny thought, but, like
you're already like, an old man, Aaron.
I think that's like honestly kind of a symptom of that type of thinking. It's like I've always kind of felt like an old man. But specifically like the realization that more of my life is behind me than in front of me is a huge weight. And I think that's another reason why this song hits so hard, is that that's the entire voice of how she's singing it, is realizing that there isn't a way to undo and there isn't, like, when there's that much behind you, like you can't turn around and walk back. That tone is just kind of like a little unnerving and jarring.
That's interesting. I just never would have pictured them as like old singing it. Like it feels so fresh to me. It feels like fresh. It feels like this is something that like just happened. Maybe she's a year out or something. You know what I mean? It's like, but it's like, this is like, but it totally could be. Like, I think it's a cool, it's actually a really neat thing to think about. Like, I think
the only thing I can think of in favor of that is that often I feel like when people get near death, they start to reflect on things like this.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like maybe he's already dead and like she's just remembering. Maybe he just died or maybe she's old or I don't know what.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. Like she's present and he's in some way not. The way that it plays in my mind is something like they've just made love. He's asleep. She's, you know, smoking the cigarette, kind of thinking through things.
That could be it too. Also, perhaps, Aaron, the answer to your earlier question, as I've pondered it, the "I loved you first" that keeps being repeated. Initially, I heard that as the way a lot of immature people use it, is like, "I loved you before anyone else did," or like, I actually loved you first. But I wonder if it's more of an at first, like so she's realizing she had to do this thing. That was her plan all along. But in reality, she's like, at the beginning, first, I actually think I did love you. And now I'm starting to wonder if this was all a good idea, but it's done. You know?
I like that too. Yeah.
So who knows?
It's funny how like no matter what age they are and no matter like what scene, it still is about as heartbreaking as it is in any other.
Yeah.
Because you're right, Andrew, that like it has the sense that he's not present, whether he's asleep, he's no longer with her, or he's died, or he's not participating in the song. It's not a duet.
Unless at the very end he rises up from the grave to say the final words, "You are my sweetest downfall."
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting take. If the verse sections are sung in, you know, quote unquote, Samson's voice, and then the chorus section is sung in Samson's voice, and the verse section is sung in Delilah's voice, or something like that.
Yeah.
That would put it more in line with the biblical story.
Maybe, except for the "your hair was long when we first met" thing.
Yeah.
That has to be from Delilah.
Yeah, that's true.
Would that be like an Alison Krauss, Willie Nelson combo? Like, what would that, you know what I mean?
who would be the guy in this case? That'd be an interesting, Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Luke
the
Bryan.
Dude from Coldplay.
The dude from Coldplay.
Chris Martin.
Oh, man. I will say, I mean, I honestly, I I am way further down the rabbit hole of lyrics in this than I think I ever would have been if it wasn't for this conversation.
Oh, really?
Because like when I just in hearing it, like it totally like the like in hearing like the song is just beautiful. Like like yeah. Again, that's just me where it's like half the time I don't even care what the lyrics say, but it's just the sentiment I get from the music does have like a tinge of it's interesting because it does echo the lyrics. It's got this like regretful mournfulness, but a beauty to it that you want to keep listening, you know? So it's great. I love how she, even just in there, like the way that she sings it and the way that she, you know, plays the piano with it, you know, just that real sparse arrangement, it totally echoes. Like you get the emotional feel of everything that I feel like we've just kind of dissected.
Yeah.
The sound of her voice is very much staring out a window with a far off look in your eyes, kind of a tone.
Totally. Kind of,
yeah. That's.
I also like in songs like this where there are repeated phrases over and over, and she does a really good job of this, where the way that she says the phrase changes from time to time. Mm-hmm. So like sometimes when she says Samson's name, it's just like matter of fact, like this statement is about Samson. And sometimes it's like, she's really savoring that word.
Well, when she says Samson went back to bed, that's such a like statement of events. Like he went to bed, but then like in the next verse, she's like, he came to my bed.
Yeah.
And then goes on to say all the things he said to her about how beautiful she was. And like, yeah, that totally changed the emotion of the meaning of everything.
So if you were to kind of describe the sensibility that the song gives you or the sensation that the song gives you, how would you describe it without leaning on the lyrics too much?
I would say peaceful regret.
100% agree. I think of the last day of fall. Like it's like the last day where it's slightly warm enough to be outside for a picnic. But you know that you're not going to be able to have one of those days for a while.
I would say emotionally drained. I get this. I feel like when I feel the way that this song feels, I'm not necessarily sad, but I also don't feel like joking around either. And it's just kind of like, I just seem to sit here for a while and kind of recoup. And I that's how it strikes me. It's just, she's drained.
Yeah, it seems sad and regretful to me, but also cozy and intimate at the same time. And maybe that goes to the sort of emotional exhaustion.
Right.
Because when you're in a stage of life where you're sad, you're regretful, but then you also have, you know, positive memories mixed in with that. Trying to cope, at least for me, trying to cope with reconciling those emotions is incredibly difficult.
I do love the idea of, you mentioned this earlier, Andrew, like the I guess you'd call it revisionist, where you're just looking at a biblical story from another perspective. Like I've never thought about Samson from Delilah's standpoint. You always just kind of assume Delilah's the bad guy, Samson's the good guy. If nothing else, it humanizes the idea of the story. All of the feels were within them.
I think one of the ways to think about it is, if you're going down the revisionist narrative route, one of the ways to think about it is the song doesn't really give any answers. It's all open-ended, but it asks a question: what if Samson and Delilah were just normal people instead of like a supervillain and a demigod? Right? You know, right. What if Samson and Delilah didn't have ulterior motives? Like, what if Samson wasn't an incredibly short-fused, violent person? What if Delilah was actually in love with Samson? And so it kind of grounds it, like you were saying, Rob. Just what if they were normal people?
I wonder if that's
fan fiction of the Bible.
Well, I wonder if that is the intent. I don't know why I keep coming back to this, but I wonder if that's the intent of the Wonder Bread reference. Cause it stands out to me so much of like, why would
just so mundane.
That? But that that side sort of hints like this, that's a modern, that's the only modern, like very obviously modern element, except perhaps the scissors mm-hmm. in the song. And maybe that's her intent is like, hey, these are like, what if they were just normal people living in an apartment in Uptown mm-hmm. and not who they are? That's a good point.
I think the owners of Wonder Bread would be frustrated that you're calling it mundane. I mean, it literally has wonder in the word.
That's true. That's true.
It's like the whole thing of like, if you have to go around, what's that famous quote? Like, if you have to go around telling everybody you're beautiful, it's because you're not or something. It's like, you're telling us your bread has so much wonder. Why are you working so hard?
Yeah. It's so good.
In this season of life that I'm in right now, I'm thinking a lot about what the next 15 years look like for me, starting a family and looking at in the future, getting a house and what I want Deep Space and the people in it to be like in 10, 15 years and Rachel and having two cats and one of the questions that I've kind of like settled on a lot is it okay if my life is it okay? Is what she's saying okay? That life might be not extraordinary. You won't have history books written about you. You won't have wonder in your bread.
In order to be extraordinary, something could be either good or bad. In the case of the biblical story, it was extraordinarily bad. Hmm. And so if your choice is between having something extraordinarily bad and having something normal and being a little regretful about it, like maybe normal with a little bit of regrets is preferable to extraordinarily bad. But to your point, you know, some people are willing to take that gamble. They're willing to go out on the limb and pursue being extraordinary.
Yeah.
And great things can come from that too. I'm not saying that everyone ends in death and the longhouse falling down on you when you push the columns apart.
I feel like it's also worth noting that, and this is getting a little bit off into the weeds, but just because something is ordinary doesn't mean it can't also be spectacular. There's things that we can experience in life that a lot of other people experienced also, but they're still spectacular experiences in and of themselves.
Well, and yeah, I think totally. some of the sections in the song, like Beneath the Stars Came Falling on Our Heads, They're Just Old Light. And you can imagine like a couple sitting on top of a hilltop under the stars. Like that's amazing. It's really mm-hmm. mundane, but also amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, just even when something as simple as, you know, me walking in the door and my kids running up to me, screaming my name and giving me a big hug. Like millions of people all over the world experience that every single day. And yet I wouldn't trade it for anything. Mm-hmm. Like there's something so ordinary about that, but that memory is still so, so strong and so fond that I feel like that's a lot of like the things she's writing down here are really pretty mundane things as far as a lot of people experience them, but they still have so much meaning to her.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I think it's regretful to her because of the way that she treated them. She treated them like they were ordinary when they're not. Mm-hmm. You know, the life is just full of things that like you just, if you look at it in the right way, it's absolutely amazing. Even if you live the most ordinary life possible, the fact that we're even having a conversation about ordinariness in a podcast is like, unbelievable. Like it's amazing. Yeah. You know, think about the sunset.
Near any of y'all.
Think about the sunset that we see every day. You know, like the amount of like insanity that had to go into the creation of that one sunset. And we don't, we just don't recognize it.
Well, mm-hmm. to that point, like Andrew and I have talked so much this week, which is like so much, so fun. And it's made my week really great. And when I think about the week, it's hard for me to remember that we didn't spend it together in the office, but it would take me 3 days by car to get to him. Like, yeah. But the week felt like, and with all of y'all, like Rob, you were in South Dallas for a lot of this week, Jonathan, you've been in Garland this week, like, but you and I talked about what computer is the best computer to get and how awful CyberDuck is. And
that was a long conversation. Lots to go over there.
Yeah. Yeah. Unpack all that. Yeah. Well, and also the fact that, I think that Rob is still on the call after so many mentions of death, and like, that's a
that itself is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, our resident Enneagram 7 is hanging out.
So. We ought to start a drinking game for whenever Aaron references death in one of these podcasts.
Seriously. Well, this is a preview of
I love it.
My next time we do this, but two of the three songs I'm still debating over are explicitly about death. One of them is not.
Get ready to get a heckin' drunk.
Oh, just wait until I spin it. Yeah. You only, actually, Aaron, guys, Aaron, you only think they're about death. You're assuming.
And on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being I didn't like it so much, 10 being I really liked it, how would you rate Samson by Regina Spektor?
I would say 10.
Whoa.
The perfect song.
This is probably one of my top 20 favorite songs ever.
Wow.
I think it captures one of my biggest fears better than anything I've ever seen. And captures the dark side of being in relationship with anyone in a way that it's hard for me to make it through the song without getting emotional. Like it's a really good song. I think it definitely deserves that.
Wonder Bread tends to have that effect on people.
Oh my gosh.
Scoring it on a scale of like personal enjoyment or like maybe chance I'll keep listening to this song, I may give it a 5. I don't typically like depressing songs.
Fair.
You're gonna have a really bad week next time.
Get ready for my first 1 out of 10. No, and it's not that it's not about, I feel like this week the scale isn't as much of a like how quality the song is or not. I think it's a high quality song. I think it's well written, well sung, and I really enjoy these lyrical deep dives because I think there's so much interesting things you can extract. And yet for me, this I can't see myself returning to this much. So I think 5 reflects like how much I respect the song and how much I think it's an incredible song. And it's an incredible piece of art, but like, I don't know. I wouldn't enjoy re-listening to this much. I don't think.
Had you ever heard it before today?
I had not.
Or whenever
This was when, I mean, Andrew sent it through a while ago and I listened to it, but no, that'd be my first time hearing it.
I'd probably give it a 7, I think. You know, maybe not the first song I'm going to choose. And there are probably other artists that aren't Regina Spektor that have the same vibe, I guess. But I actually, like, I started listening to the rest of the album after I heard it. And I was like, oh, this is really good. So I actually, you know, sometimes I get into a somber mood and it's nice to have a little, it feels chill to me. So I'd give it a 7.
I'd say 8. I think it has a lot of re-listenability. Oh yeah. Hey, Rob goes 7, I go 8. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to change mine to a 9 actually.
Yeah.
Aaron, why don't you give yours a 3?
I think it has a lot of great re-listenability. I've heard this song hundreds of times easily. Well, maybe in excess of 100 times. And I still feel get feelings when I listen to it, and you know, I can still sit down and read the lyrics and pull something new out of it each time. So I think awesome. I really like it. I go 8. Without further ado, here is Samson by Regina Spektor.
You are my sweetest downfall. I loved you first. I loved you first. Beneath the sheets of paper lies on his head. He ate a slice of Wonder Bread and went right back to bed. And the history books forgot about us, and the Bible didn't mention us, and the Bible didn't mention us, not even once. Myself one night, a pair of dull scissors in the yellow light, and he told me that I'd done all right, and kissed me till the morning light, and he kissed me till the morning light. Samson. Slice of Wonder Bread and went right back to bed. Oh, we couldn't bring the columns down, we couldn't destroy a single one. And the history books forgot about us, and the Bible didn't mention us, not even one.